Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. The Environmental Protection Agency recently proposed new regulations aimed at curbing carbon emissions nationwide. Nearly 70% of Ohio's energy comes from the coal industry, which would be probably one of the most affected by the proposed rules. Here to talk about the possible regulations and how they could impact Ohio is Columbus Dispatch environmental reporter Laura Ehrenschild. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
What has the EPA proposed that is going to have such an impact on Ohio energy producers?
Well, EPA is basically asking that the states across nationwide cut CO2 emissions by 30% by 2030, and that's 30% from 2005 levels. So in Ohio, for example, we have already cut 16.5% of our CO2 emissions from that point. So even though 30% seems like a kind of a high jump to get to, when you base it on those 2005 levels, it's not quite as big of a leap as it sounds.
Are these rules, they're in the rulemaking process now. They're asking for public comment. There's a public comment period that I think goes through into July. And then after that, whoever makes up rules and the EPA gets together and they pound together rules. This is not a legislative initiative. Is it likely to go through as is, or are folks like you expecting changes?
I'm expecting to see a lot of challenges in the courts.
Okay.
I think after the initial public comment period and once EPA sort of hammers out more of what they're doing, I think you'll see some federal challenges by individual states. The West Virginia Attorney General has already said that he intends to go through line by line and find any legal challenges he can. And I think once the states figure out their individual plans for how they'll comply, you'll see some state-level suits as well from individual companies.
My guest is Laura Ehrenschild. She's the Columbus Dispatch environmental reporter. We're talking about the proposed new EPA rules regarding carbon emissions in the United States. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Coming up later in the program, we'll have someone from the energy industry, someone representing the coal, that part of the equation. We'll also have someone from an organization that supports the planned changes to carbon emissions regulations in the United States. You mentioned that Ohio already is 16.5% or more than halfway to the 30% by
2030.
Right.
Yeah.
That's partly because of the rules that were in place locally or at the state level to do this, to force electric utilities to use more renewable energy and that sort of thing. Tell us what the impact. Recently, the Ohio General Assembly passed Senate Bill 310 that froze those energy standards in the state. Could those proposed regulations render Senate Bill 310 moot, or what's the impact between those two?
Yeah, you've hit a pretty big point for people who, like me, or you know anybody else who's watching this issue and who pay attention to the things that are happening at the state house. The governor hasn't signed Senate Bill 310 yet, though all indications I think are that he intends to.
Right.
And it's sort of unclear what that will do for these new EPA regulations. Senate Bill 310, like you said, freezes the emission standards that we had in place in Ohio locally to kind of protect our air here. And the EPA is now saying that we've got to make further cuts. So it'll be interesting to see how those two jive together once Ohio gets its rules in place.
If Ohio continued on the trajectory it's on, even at the frozen levels, isn't it possible that we could achieve those savings?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I might not be the best person to answer that question, but I think it's definitely possible. I think the thing that's tough is that Senate Bill 310 allows, once the 2 years are up, it makes it a little easier for companies like AEP or other power companies to comply and lower their emissions. So it sort of drops the bar a little bit lower than where it had been before.
Who is AEP ultimately responsible to, the U.S. EPA or the state?
I think they're responsible to both. U.S. EPA is setting these standards that the state's going to have to comply with unless it does, you know, change or get challenged in the courts and those challenges are successful. And AEP is going to have to find, and other power companies will have to find a way to comply with whatever measures Ohio takes.
And what does the EPA do if a state or a power company fails to comply or doesn't achieve those goals?
I think that what you'll see and I don't know for sure, but I think what you'll see is on a state-by-state level, states are able to set, with these new EPA regulations, states are able to set their own sort of rubric for achieving these new standards. And so they could do a mixture of things. States could individually decide how to handle it. They can do cap and trade. Mm-hmm. They can do more investment in alternative sources like solar and wind. They can try and meet on the demand side, lower demand by getting people more incentives to lower their electrical use. And I think that for the power companies, it's a matter of how they jive with what the states want them to do, the individual states want them to do. So for AEP, their challenge will be meeting what Ohio says that they should do.
There's a few other states that are impacted the way Ohio is. Pennsylvania, coal-producing states, by and large, that they then use the coal locally as well as moving it out. Are other states doing anything? Have other states reacted? Other states like Ohio reacted pretty much the same way? Or?
Yeah, I think you see in the coal, the Appalachian states, West Virginia, Kentucky, us. There's a lot of backlash from both politicians and coal industry leaders because, we run on coal. More than 2/3 of our power here comes from coal. So it requires a major infrastructure change to shift to something else. And it's also a lot of jobs and a lot of businesses that are running in parts of the country that need those jobs.
We've seen a lot of pushback in Congress regarding the announcement by the EPA. Does Congress have the power to stop the regulations from going through at all? Or does it have to be at the court level?
Yeah, I believe that Senator Mitch McConnell has already said that he's already introduced a bill saying that he would, if they can't comply with certain things, if the EPA can't comply with certain things, that the bill wouldn't be allowed to go forward. Whether that becomes a reality or not, I don't know.
These have been coming down the pike for a long time, though. This isn't really a surprise to anybody.
No, these are standards that that very closely mimic something proposed by the Natural Resources Defense Council a couple years ago. And so, everybody kind of knew that these were coming.
What did the Bush administration do with this issue? Not much. I mean, okay.
Yeah. My understanding is that it wasn't that much, although I wasn't really covering the environment at that point.
The EPA is seeking a 30% cut in carbon emissions, and the regulations would affect each state differently. Would Ohio necessarily have any more flexibility because of its dependence on coal? Would the federal government be more forgiving?
Well, Ohio doesn't actually have to hit 30%. This is sort of an important distinction, although they're close. Ohio's got to hit 28%.
Okay.
And like we said, Ohio has already gotten to 16.5% from those 2005 levels. So we've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 or 12% left to go. And there's an appeals process. States can file for extensions. There's several different outlets for them if they're having trouble meeting the new regulations.
So that's just 16 years away. How long is this process expected to take?
Well, I mean, like you said, the EPA is accepting public comment through July, I think, and then they're going to sort of hammer out the rest of the rules by next year. I think the states have until the summer of 2016 to come up with their own plans. They can file for extensions after that.
Okay.
I think like with anything that happens in government, it'll probably be pretty drawn out.
Each time a new regulation governing carbon emissions is passed, the industry claims job losses and that plants will close. Historically, has that been the case in Ohio?
Yeah, you've seen, especially after the Clean Air Act and the amendments that have been passed in like the late 80s, early 90s, several coal plants closed for sure here in Ohio. But another big part of that is that the natural gas industry is producing more. So even though most of our energy still comes from coal, natural gas is eating up a larger part of the puzzle there. And
that has nothing to do with the regulations.
Well, natural gas burns cleaner than coal.
Right.
So
okay.
it partially it does. And it's also that we have an overabundance now or an abundance of natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
So companies can rely more on natural gas than they do on coal. And as a result, coal gets a smaller piece of the pie, which leads to plants closing. AEP had already lined up, I think, 3 plants in Ohio to close even before these new emissions regulations were announced.
Could these regulations affect other things besides coal, cars, trucks, the transportation industry?
They could. The Obama administration has already put down some new standards about emissions from automobiles. I can't remember exactly what those were, but I believe it was automobiles produced between 2005 and 2012 had to meet different emission standards. And that was directly designed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from cars.
Is most of the activity going to take place at the state level or at the federal level? They have the public comment period, but when it comes to the lobbying and bringing out the big guns, where are we likely to see that?
I think you're likely to see that at the state level. And the reason is that the regulations dictate that states lay out their own individual plans for how to comply.
Okay.
So as states develop their own plans to get through these new emissions standards and how to meet them, I think you'll see challenges and lobbying from the power industry or the environmental folks at the state level rather than at the federal level.
Will we see our rates go up?
That's the million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I think that it's certainly possible. I think that it might not be possible too. The coal industry and the power industry, one of the talking points when new regulations get released is that electric rates are going to go up. But we went through some of the federal data on that and adjusted for inflation and showed that electric prices had actually dropped, even though our reliance on coal has also dropped. So I don't know. I'm not sure what we'll see.
Because there's more factors at play than just tougher regulations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Laura Ehrenschild, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Laura Ehrenschild, she's Columbus Dispatch environmental reporter. Stay with us. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed new regulations aimed to curb nationwide carbon emissions by 30%. Coal companies have said the regulations could deal a fatal blow to the industry, resulting in plant closures and job losses. Environmental groups say the rules could help battle climate change. Joining us now by phone from Mississippi is the Director of State Affairs for the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, Jade Davis. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me in.
Also joining us is the Managing Director of Energy and Clean Air Programs for the Ohio Environmental Council, Trish Demeter. Welcome to the show, Trish.
Thank you, Ann. Thanks for having me.
Jade, what's at stake for the coal industry with these proposed regulations? They weren't necessarily a surprise, but now that you know what they are, what are we talking about?
Well, what we're essentially talking about is a fundamental shift in how energy is delivered here in the United States. For us, as far as just let me tell you a little bit about ACE, the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. We are a trade association of the coal electric supply line. So everyone that people that bring it out the ground, the railroads to ship it, the industries that create the support mechanisms for that, everything from generators to scrubbers to, you know, earth moving equipment, and to our electric utilities, investor-owned co-ops, and municipals and others that use coal to make electricity. And so what many of our members are saying is that this will affect jobs, it will affect tax base, it will affect reliability and these kind of things. And so one thing we in the United States have become accustomed to is turn on the lights on demand and knowing that it's going to be there on demand and being able to do it at a price that's affordable. And what we've been doing the last 40 years, the Clean Air Act, is essentially making sure we can do that and a better and better place. Mm-hmm. And so we've done that for the most part, and we see this rule as being a step too far, being in the ramp-ups and also being the technological limits.
When you talk about technological limits, what do you mean by that?
Well, when other Clean Air Act amendments and the original Clean Air Act was put together, industries, whether it was coal or electricity or if it was refining cars, all these things, had technology that was in place that was achievable, provable in order to reach those goals.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that just isn't the case with carbon dioxide. There are right now no carbon capture and storage units operating in the world, yet we have a rule for new plants that's based on something that isn't operating. We also have reductions for carbon dioxide that will depend on some kind of carbon capture at some point, again, that isn't there yet. And so from an industry perspective, we're looking at this saying, okay, well, what is the real goal? Is it just to eliminate the way we create power from this fuel source, or is it to really tackle some of these issues that we're seeing on the environmental side, which we have been doing for the last 4 years with, you know, very measured regulation.
So carbon capture and storage units are not operating in the world yet. Is that because there's not the technology for it, or there hasn't been the demand enough to spend what it would take?
Well, the technology for the first generation is there. It's just currently being built now.
Okay.
And the one in Sask Power in Saskatchewan, about 10 miles north of the U.S. border in Canada. Then we have the Kemper County Energy Facility in Kemper County, Mississippi, which is probably about an hour and a half, 2 hours south of where I'm at right now. And that's being built by Mississippi Power. And it's underway right now. And frankly, it's cost prohibitive at this point because it's generation one for full scale. And so generation two and three is something that DOE is working on. They've announced that those things will cut prices, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70% for carbon capture. We're just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're still a decade away. So there's going to be a gap in when the technology and the price all is going to add up based on where we want to go with these carbon rules.
How do you decide what's affordable? Who decides for the American people what they can afford?
The American people can.
Mm-hmm. It's not really a choice if you have to heat your home.
Yes, that is true. But what you do see right now is that the EPA rules essentially say, well, prices will go up. So at some point, at some level, we have, you know, forces from on high dictating what is affordable and what isn't, what is a reasonable price increase and what isn't, rather than our state regulators that usually do that stuff historically through integrated resource plans and rate cases and things like that, and your market monitors that monitor transmission, i.e. FERC or i.e. PJM, MISO, those kind of things. And so it's usually those local groups and regional groups that do that. And right now what we're seeing in this rule, essentially the federal government's taking a role in doing that by mandating price increases, by mandating premature shutdowns, possibly leading to some stranded costs on consumers. And stranded costs, I mean, consumers pay for a plant to be built. If plant was found reasonable and prudent, the plant is built, consumers pay for it, mm-hmm. through their rate base and their electric rates, and then all of a sudden that plant is shut down. Well, the plant still has to be paid off.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether they're using that or not, they are. But then when you shut it down to switch to a higher cost form of electricity, it's sort of a double whammy.
Trish Demeter, when they come up with these sorts of goals, these emission changes, these changes in emissions by a certain date, to what extent is the cost to the average consumer brought into that equation?
Great. Pardon me. Great question. EPA absolutely took into consideration costs when they were developing this rule and the guidance that came down to the states just last Monday when they issued the new carbon pollution standards. They assessed each state and its power system, how much each state is relying on coal, other fossil fuels, what is the renewable capacity, what is the state already doing in terms of reducing carbon emissions, and what's the capacity for energy efficiency and renewable power to fill the gap. So they absolutely take into consideration how each state is currently at the 2012 level, mm-hmm. when they look forward and set each state's goal for the reduction. So it was very much part of the consideration in developing the guidance.
Now, the EPA is seeking an overall 30% cut in carbon emissions, 28% in Ohio. Already, Ohio is that goes back to starting at 2005. Ohio is already at has achieved 16.5% cuts in its emissions, so it's well on its way. But that was partly a function of the 2008 regulations in Ohio that have now been frozen at the current levels. To what extent do you understand that 16.5% achievement or level of achievement was a function of the regulations that have been amended now by 310?
Actually, that was very much part of it. So they did look at the state's renewable portfolio standard and the energy efficiency standard and what those standards have achieved since 2009. And it's significant. Those standards have delivered a lot of savings in terms of carbon reductions and other air pollution reductions, but also consumer savings. But some of that also had to factor in that economic downturn that reduced demand overall for electricity.
And natural gas production.
Absolutely. So those components were factored in and to the plan and to Ohio's limit that was set.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. With me by phone from Mississippi is Jade Davis. He with the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, and also Trish Demeter from the Ohio Environmental Council. We're talking about the proposed new regulations by the EPA to reduce carbon emissions in the United States by 30% by 2030. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ohio is going to be one of the states that's the hardest hit by these regulation changes. Jade Davis, is the rest of the country and utility companies, coal producers in the rest of the country, are they looking at a state like Ohio, as populous as it is, as industrialized as it still is, to see how it works?
You know, right now, what we do anticipate is that, you know, your industrial states that do have a lot of coal-based electricity will have the, you know, the biggest rate impacts and probably have the biggest reliability impacts. Because essentially how our power grid is set up, if you shut, plants are put in certain places in order to support power moving through the grid.
Mm-hmm.
If those plants are removed, and then power has to still move through the grid at the same locations, it has to be imported in, it's going to cost more. So this is going to affect every major industry in Ohio and every consumer. And then also during peak days, I mean, just if you look at what happened during the polar vortex in February, essentially, if you look at just AEP's coal plants that are set to retire in 2017 from another regulation, you know, 2/3 of those plants, 67% of those plants that were called on during those peak are set to retire. So what happens when it inevitably gets cold in February and January again?
Well, this is something that the industry's been planning on, though. They're set to retire in 2017. What were the plans, and what is this industry already doing to make up the difference for those lost plants?
And there's what we've been talking about for the last few years now is, we're going to do these retirements for a variety of reasons. Some are purely economic. Some, the plant is old and it needs to go because operation and maintenance does not benefit consumers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Some need to go because new regulations, which have come down, have been agreed upon, you cannot invest this kind of money inside of a plant that won't be economic and run it because, again, that's not a benefit to customers either. And so you have that. Now, the difference is that it does take years. It takes time in order to replace things. It takes time to build. It takes time to get permits. And it takes time to get the workers and materials to build these kind of things. These power plants just don't go up overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're saying, okay, build a natural gas plant, you still have to build pipeline. And even with that pipeline, you have to go through right-of-ways and things like that. Where, again, we all know coal is sort of an on-demand fuel. Now, what the biggest issue with what happened in the polar vortex and what we fear with the carbon dioxide rules sort of stranding useful in plants, and especially plants that aren't fully amortized, is that curtailment happens in the wintertime as well, where natural gas has to, by law, go to home heating in most parts of the country first before it goes to electricity. So what happens when, you know, we have curtailment issues again, and but these plants that used to be there that were useful are no longer there because of, you know, the carbon rules and the ramp-ups in the carbon rules? And that's something that's not being talked about. The ramp-up, the 2020 ramp-ups, the front-loading of the rule does not give companies, it does not give states and public service commissioners a lot of time in order to figure out where do we get extra power at and how much that power is going to cost and who pays for those costs.
I mentioned earlier in the program, these regulations aren't a surprise. They've been coming down the pike for a long time. Surely the industry has been anticipating them.
Yes. I mean, I think folks have. Now, the difference is that, you know, anticipating the regulation but not knowing what it actually looks like. It's hard to plan for something and you don't quite get what it is, because just a week and a half prior in D.C., you know, folks thought it was going to be a 20 to 25% total reduction, and it ended up being 30%.
Okay.
And folks thought it, the ramp up was going to happen in the last 5 years, 2025 to 2030 or 2027 to 2030. And it seems like the ramp up happens up front from really from 2017 to 2020. So it's kind of hard to plan for something that's constantly changing.
Mm, right.
And we're talking about multi-billion dollar investments.
Right.
And so those are the things that, you know, and when it gets down to cost to consumers and things like that, again, many of our members are fully integrated and regulated utilities. And so they can't just spend money without going through a process that may take a year or two right there.
Trish Demeter?
Yeah, I think what's really important to understand about the carbon pollution standard that was issued last week is that it doesn't dictate to the states how they meet this goal. So it doesn't say you have to do carbon capture and sequestration. It doesn't mandate that you have to do, you know, retrofits to current power plants. The US EPA issued a guidance that provided for a toolbox that includes four pretty important tools that will help control cost and offer some very cost-effective solutions on how the state can achieve the new carbon limits. So it's important to know that the US EPA is not telling Ohio how to meet the goal. It's saying, here's some options, and the state of Ohio has a choice to make. They can choose one or two of those tools listed in the EPA guidance. They can choose all of them, or they can choose none of them. So there's a tremendous amount of flexibility that the Ohio EPA has in crafting a plan that's going to make sense for Ohio and then is going to not necessarily mean rate impacts to the state and to ratepayers in Ohio. So I think that's important to know. And we do have time to plan for this. So the final the comment period will open here shortly. There will be a full year between now and next summer when a final rule is issued by the US EPA, and then another year after that for the Ohio EPA to come up with its own plan on how to implement the standards.
Jay Davis, if state lawmakers had left the regulation, the Ohio regulation, energy standards, renewable energy standards alone, in other words, had not passed Senate Bill 310, and if the governor or if the governor decided not to sign it, and the state proceeded in the trajectory that was put forth earlier, would that go a long way to solving or at least addressing the issues of planning and so forth?
You know, we weren't involved in 310 at all there in Ohio. I mean, we followed it.
Right.
We weren't involved at all.
But freezing them at the current levels and dispensing with the energy efficiency standards and so forth, doesn't that sort of set Ohio back?
Well, I'm not sure, only because when talking to the Ohio EPA director about, you know, just this whole 111D in general, they were under the sense that they'll still get credit for what has been done.
Sure, right.
And so going forward, I think that, you know, they can go and make a compelling argument if needed. When we're going through the SIP process, they can go forward and make a compelling argument to the governor and the legislature to do whatever it needs to do in order to reactivate, change, modify, or whatever going forward. That may be a tool they can use, but that's not something we've been involved in on the, you know, given, you know, Senate Bill 310 there in Ohio.
Right. The utilities weren't very outspoken about it.
Yeah. And since we've been so knee deep in really the federal issue and dealing with, you know, the EPA issue, you know, we do hope that states like Ohio will be able to have, you know, adequate and acceptable state implementation programs rather than having federal implementation programs come down. So that's going to be a whole nother issue. But it gets down to where we see the fundamental flaw in the guideline right now. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is something that the EPA will reconsider after the comment period. But this essentially, they talk about flexibility and things like that and the four building blocks that my dear friend Trish had just mentioned is true. There is four basic building blocks in which they set each state's emission rates and goals at. However, the flexibility argument is not quite there. If you're a state like Ohio, if you're an industrial state that make a lot of stuff and also happens to have a lot of people, the goals essentially is compelling you to either, one, expand your RPS, two, shut down a lot of coal, and then three, join a cap and trade program. That's pretty much going to be your options as the rule is currently done. And so all those things have ramifications just on a cost, reliability, and also a job and tax base issue. I mean, there are school systems in Ohio that are operated off of one power plant that happens to be coal operated. There are whole counties and cities in which that is the largest employer. And so, again, by choosing to go down this road, it seems like the flexibility is to do everything you can do without coal and to a large extent without really building out your natural gas infrastructure as well. And so there's ramifications for this that do decrease flexibility.
I think two important points, Ann, is that just getting back to your question really quickly about Senate Bill 310, that bill, if it becomes law, will absolutely put Ohio at a disadvantage. In 2013 alone, the renewable and efficiency standards reduced greenhouse gas emissions by over 1 million tons in the state of Ohio. So if even a temporary timeout for 2 years will put us behind in terms of meeting the standard or staying on track with reducing carbon emissions. And then one other thing, just to Jade's point, is one of the compliance options in the toolbox is not to shut down coal, but to make our existing coal plants more efficient. And so essentially, you can think about Ohio's a potential compliance path is to improve the efficiency of our existing coal plant. These are old plants, some of them 50 and 60 years old. They're highly inefficient. And so improving their energy efficiency or how much energy you get out of each ton of coal burned is not necessarily a bad thing. It could actually create some security for some of those plants that are on the cusp of either being retired or being retrofitted to be more efficient.
We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. Proposed new EPA regulations limiting carbon emission standards could start going into effect as soon as 2015. Environmental groups say these standards would combat climate change and significantly reduce air pollution. Coal-fired plants are the biggest contributors to air pollution and could have the most to lose. Still with us by phone is Jade Davis. He's Director of State Affairs for the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. And also with us is Trish Demeter. She's Director of Energy and Clean Air Programs for the Ohio Environmental Council. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Jade, I had to stop you there before we took a break. Do you want to follow up with something?
Yeah, Trish is right. There is a building block in there talking about 6% reduction in coal emissions from existing coal plants. However, if a company, a co-op or investor-owned utility or a municipal goes and does a significant modification, to upgrade the plant, they're still subject to new source review. And so, essentially, they'll still have to meet not only the 111D, but the 111B. There's no, and that's for new plants, as if it was building a new plant.
You mean both sets of regulations?
Yes.
Okay.
And so, essentially, again, it's sort of putting states in a box where this plant would almost have to install carbon capture and storage if it was to really go and try to really reach the 6 to 10% range of reductions in just efficiency. And so in all other new source standards from all other things that they will have to do. So again, it's still boxing states into a box in which I really do hope that EPA will be reviewing going forward.
Bill in Marysville, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Hi there. Couple of comments. I am a grandfather with grandchildren, so I've got a little bit more of a long-term outlook on this, not from my perspective, from my grandchildren. I remember many decades ago when scrubbers were just too expensive to put on smokestacks to get out some of the carbon. Well, suddenly they were put on there. But at the same time, my electric bill goes up every time that coal companies, electric companies, have to add something on. The Clean Air Act has done its job. What we need next is a Habitable Climate Act. The most significant thing about this carbon capture, this carbon elimination, is to save a climate that we can live in 20, 30, 50 years from now. The gentleman from the coal industry doesn't seem to be real concerned with that. He's mentioned polar vortex several times. It's a scary Fox News phrase. The likelihood of the polar vortex having occurred this past winter is a result of climate change. And as a result of climate change, coal is going to keep making it worse and worse. Cost of green energy is estimated at about 1 gallon of milk a month. I think I'd give up a gallon of milk for my grandchildren if we could have green energy that is sustainable. That's all I'll say, and I'll take my comments off the air.
All right.
Thank you.
Bill, thanks a lot. Jade Davis,
hey,
does the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity have conversations about the ultimate purpose of these regulations, which is, like Bill said, to make sure we can breathe our air in 40 or 50 or 60 years?
Yeah, and I really do appreciate Bill's comments, and it gives me an opportunity to sort of clarify a couple things for myself personally and for ACE. One is that we do see carbon capture and storage as being a viable alternative for coal going forward and for the use of coal, and we are very interested in that. We are supporting plants that are doing these things. We are supporting pipelines that can utilize and commodify carbon and take it out of the emission stream for coal plants. We are actively doing that around the country. And so even at its current cost, we do believe, just like scrubbers, just like low NOx burners and bag houses and things like that, in which we also support with cleaning out the air, we do believe right now they are the technology is expensive and is going to continue to go down as it's being proven more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is that we just need to get there first. We need to get there to using it, to get data on it, to improve it, and to get through this next decade making sure we're taking steps down that road. What we fear is that if you shut down coal plants, you will shut down that research as well, because it'll make the research less and less economic in order to actually get the technology that can take the carbon out of the air.
Yeah.
And then
go ahead.
And then second, we have to look at this from a very geopolitical standpoint as well. If you take away just every coal plant in the United States, you're not going to make a dent in climate. You're not going to make a dent in sea level change and things like that. So this is a geopolitical issue. And United States, if this is going to be truly important, you know, we need to handle that on the geopolitical landscape as well.
And because it's larger than the United States, it's not.
Yes, yes, it is. Okay. And starting at home and being able to export, because no one else is going to develop this unless we do. But people are still going to use coal. And I, for one, going forward, will want people to use coal with our technology and with our proven technologies that we know actually work, that we can benefit from economically and the environment can benefit from here in the United States. So, again, we can't have regulations that take away our use of coal or discourages the use of coal wholesale in the U.S. because it's going to have ramifications that are going to be even bigger than the U.S. And then finally, the polar vortex thing was not climate change. That was winter. If you look at the temperatures and average winter temperatures throughout, you know, the last century, you have those kind of winter storms happen about three times every 10 years. And so, again, that wasn't just climate change. That wasn't, you know.
The fact of the matter is we have bad weather. And,
yeah, we
and
have bad
from time
weather.
To time,
was,
regardless. But the
January in Cleveland.
Right.
I grew up
the American the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, though, doesn't deny climate change, right?
No, I mean, we're not running out here climate change deniers and things like that.
Okay.
At the end of the day, that's not even our mission. Our mission is to encourage the use of clean coal technologies when using coal for electricity and being able to protect the use of that from in federal, state, local jurisdictions.
Does the coal industry think of itself as purely a coal industry or an energy fuel industry?
We're America's power.
Right. So, I mean, is the coal industry, does it have any vested interest in investing in renewable energy sources for the future?
I mean, renewable energy stakeholders will make those investments.
Okay.
Just like we're going to make those investments in carbon capture and storage. I mean,
okay.
Some of our companies have put up billions of dollars in order to advance this alone, and just in the last 40 years of Clean Air Act, and Bill was right, the Clean Air Act is working. Again, mm-hmm. I grew up in Cleveland in the 80s and 90s, and I remember, mm-hmm. you know, when it would rain, little dots on my dad's car, and he would have to go wipe the car down again. That doesn't happen at my parents' house now. We live at the same house, but that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Clean Air Act is working. I've seen it in my life. I'm sure Bill has, and we want to continue to do that. We just need to make sure it's working in a way in which it's going to have a true all-of-the-above energy policy. That's what we want.
Trish Demeter?
Yeah, I think, I don't believe that the carbon pollution standards that were issued last week, you know, exclude the state or disallow the state to have an all of the above energy strategy. That's the beauty of the toolbox that US EPA handed down to each state. But until this regulation, talking about the Clean Air Act, until this regulation was released, power plants have been able to emit unlimited amounts of carbon pollution into the air for over a century, and that has absolutely contributed. So I don't necessarily agree with Jade when he says that if you shut down every coal plant, you won't see an impact on the climate. Coal plants account for 40% of our carbon emissions in the U.S., and Ohio alone is the fifth highest state in terms of carbon emissions coming from power plants. So it is a significant contributor to climate change. And to the caller's question, we absolutely have an obligation to act and to curb these carbon emissions for our future generations. We've seen already impacts to our health and to our environment because of these unchecked emissions. 8 of the 9 warmest years ever recorded have been since the year 2000, and that's since records started being taken in 1880. So we know that there's a warming climate. It's proven. And most people believe that Ohio lawmakers and Congress and the president should be taking action. I think half believe that that government should be taking action, that it's fair and reasonable to curb carbon emissions, to, you know, protect ourselves against contributing to global warming. And 69% of Ohioans believe that corporations and industry have an obligation to act, too. So it's important that we do it, and it's important that we start now.
Jade Davis, you represent people who want to make a profit off the work they do. And is there any way that the coal industries would make these efforts to modernize their plants, to upgrade their plants, to develop the future technologies like carbon capture and storage without the regulations? What would you tell your shareholders?
Well, to be honest with you, many of these companies have and will, some even without these regulations in the past, because honestly, the increased efficiencies, increased safety and things like that are good for the bottom line as well. So it's not that, you know, companies do not or don't care. All of us want clean air. All of us want clean water. All of us want, you know, safe employment practices. All of us do want, to make sure that we have these resources around and use them safely and responsibly for the duration of time. Mm-hmm. So again, it's not in our best interest not to do these things. You're not going to keep a plant there 100 years old because it's going to be inefficient. Technology will catch up with it, and all of a sudden you will be less efficient than your competitors. So, I mean, these things would be done. Would the ramp-ups and things like that be done by 2020? No, because, again, that's not good for the end-use consumer. And when I'm talking about end-use consumer, I'm not just talking about mom-and-pop Buckeye. I'm also talking about the places of employment that employs mom-and-pop Buckeye and their children and their family and things like that. All these things we know do have an effect on outputs, and having an effect on outputs is going to affect jobs. And that's one of the major things we need to talk about. And again, I do think that we can't get this. We can't talk about this climate reducing CO2 in a bubble of just the U.S. I mean, if you look at China and India, they alone are worth 20% of global emissions of CO2.
Right. Trish Demeter, do you agree that, you know, air, we don't control the air, we only control what we put into the air? What about the U.S.'s relationship with other countries where they don't have anything close to what we have in regulations?
It's a great question, and one that we hear a lot from folks that don't necessarily support the carbon pollution standards is that, you know, if the U.S., why is the U.S. doing anything if other countries aren't? Well, I, you know, don't believe that the U.S. wants to be, you know, this is not a race to the bottom. This is not, the U.S. should be embracing our leadership role in terms of being better than other countries in terms of our air quality and our water quality. These, you know, Clean Air Act is over 40 years old, so it's important that we expect our U.S. government to curb harmful air pollution. We've seen a lot of progress, and we should expect more, particularly as we're contributing quite a bit to the to the causes of climate change. So I think that we have to be a leader on this. And in Ohio, we also have to recognize that, yes, we have a unique set of challenges, but Ohio has a spirit of not backing down from a challenge. So we can tackle this problem. We could acknowledge that we are a very coal-heavy state, but because we have the flexibility that we do from the U.S. government, we can come up with a solution that is very cost-effective and really good for our state.
Trish Demeter, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Trish is with the Ohio Environmental Council. Also, Jade Davis, thanks to you as well for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Let us know if we can be helpful at all.
We will. Thanks a lot. Jade Davis, he's Director of State Affairs for the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.